gang, welcome to the show. Welcome to National Bugle Radio on the Republic Broadcasting Network, RBN, republicbroadcasting.org, the place you go to listen to free speech, to free thinkers, to free speakers like myself. And Jeremy's with me today. This is a live show. And Jeremy, greetings to you from Kosher-tified Land. It is the app that helps you lead a non-kosher certified lifestyle, which you can download from nationalbugle.com. Greetings, Jeremy.
Greetings. Indeed it does, and indeed you can. Also here at RBN, we provide you with those special glasses, like in They Live, where you can see through the lies of the mainstream media as to who's really in control of things and how the deal really is.
Indeed, those glasses. And you don't even have to go through an unnecessarily long, like 15-minute fight scene to get those glasses. We just hand them out for free.
As cool as that fight scene was, no, you don't have to go through that. We give it to you just by tuning in. But you know what? That may not be the case for much longer if we don't get some donations in and get them in now. I'm hearing that RBN is in a continuous fund drive to raise money to maintain equipment, to keep free speech alive, to keep plenty of those glasses in so we can pass them out to you guys. You gotta see those aliens out there, right?
RBN is the optometrist of free speech.
But yeah, the station really needs your money bad. You know, you can go to republicbroadcasting.org and smash that donate button. There's also a way to call in and make a donation by credit card. Is that correct, Patrick?
There is. You can do that. You can find all the information on the website. Of course, I know the number for calling in to credit card donations isn't the same as the call-in number for joining the show and talking, but you can get all the information from this number, 1-800-313-9443, 1-800-313-9443, so you can call in. But Jeremy's got a couple of things to talk about before we start with the callers.
I do have a correction from yesterday. Actually, you know, we were talking about how you brought up the article in Pennsylvania. Some of the lower-level judges had challenged and halted the governor and his trainee health officials, COVID-19 constitutional right violations and policies. And that's a good thing. And then I asked the question, well, what's it going to, you know, do in the Supreme Court? I mentioned that Kentucky has been through this. And I made one mistake yesterday. It was just a slip. I actually knew this. But in Kentucky, the lower level judges challenged Governor Beshear, and it went to the Kentucky Supreme Court. And the Kentucky Supreme Court sided with Beshear. It did not go to SCOTUS. And the Kentucky Supreme Court, there's seven judges from the seven judicial areas in Kentucky that are elected. And then the Chief Justice is chosen by his peers, and he serves for 4 years. The seven Supreme Court judges serve for 8 years. So that's where it stopped at in Kentucky. Our cases have not went to the Supreme Court, not to SCOTUS, but to the state level court. So I'm not sure where it's at in Pennsylvania right now, or how it's going to do with your Supreme Court, with the Supreme Court in Pennsylvania, or any other courts that challenge it.
Mm-hmm. Right. Yeah. So in Pennsylvania, it's a federal court, so it wouldn't, I don't believe, be going through state court. So it would go. This was a district court. Next stop would be a circuit court of appeals, the circuit courts. That's what they do. And after that, it would go to the federal Supreme Court. So there is that.
We have a caller from Pennsylvania usually that calls into Stormfront. I can't remember his name.
But he's Gary.
Gary from Pennsylvania. See, I mean, since we're not familiar with Pennsylvania, I'm in Kentucky and you're in the Burbank studios, maybe Gary could call in and let us know how that's going over in Pennsylvania sometime.
We'll find out about that. There is a little bit of news. Is there anything else you wanted to talk about? I know we have a call, but there's just one or two things I wanted to introduce before we go to the caller.
I monitor Rush, and just before I got on RBN here, I just tuned in real quick to Rush to see if there's anything important. And he is pushing this Chinese whistleblower coronavirus made in the lab as a biological weapon. he's actually giving that airtime. I don't know how much he's buying into it per se, but he's taking it seriously. And he actually mentioned, Patrick, well, since the Chi-Coms are communists, they kill their own people. It wouldn't surprise me if this were the case, you know, to reduce population. So, you know, as usual, Rush says some good stuff, but he says some stuff that's subversive. And it looks like that the Normicon magipedes who tune in are getting all ramped up for some sort of conflict with China, even if it's all financial. And also they're getting ramped up for blood in the streets on Election Day and preparing for that.
So,
scary times we live in.
Yeah, I mean, we always have these imperatives to go to war to stop one government or another government from abusing its own people. And of course, China's huge. China is, you know, they've got by far, well, I mean, India has a large population too, but China's got about, what, four times as many people as we do. And they've got the same, a slightly larger land mass than we do. Their economy is more or less the same size as ours. And their military is getting bigger and bigger. And the idea that we would want to, what's the idea that we should overthrow their government because they're trying to kill their own people with COVID-19 by what? By letting them go to concerts and walk around without masks? I mean, it doesn't make sense. And I don't know where the origin of this virus was. I never did know. I never said I knew. And I'm agnostic as to where it came from. Was it from a Chinese lab? Was it from a lab in North Carolina? Was it from a lab in Maryland? Who knows? And but like I've said before, if the Chinese had this plot to develop some sort of virus that was maybe slightly more dangerous than the flu, unleash it on their own people with the hope that it might spread overseas and foreign governments and elites would seize upon it as an excuse to lock down their own people, to trash their own economies, to freak out their own people. That's a pretty bizarre plan. And if that was their plan, wow, it really got carried out to a T, didn't it? But it just sounds kind of bizarre.
And even more oppressive is that Belarus regime with Lukashenko, who refuses to violate his citizens' right to breathe by not making them wear masks. Like, how dare he not protect them from corona and stifle their breathing and every freedom that you can imagine by not doing a lockdown? Well, he's got to go.
The facts of the matter is we've got our own problems, to be serious. I mean, we've got our own problems. We've got a Jewish-dominated elite that is out to make sure that white people, white Christian people, become a minority in this country and can never challenge the Jewish domination. And that seems to include having black riots in the street, black anti-white race riots in the street, and all sorts of other things. Why we need to worry about democracy in Hong Kong or Uyghurs in the Chinese deserts or whatever else it is, I don't know. I just don't get it.
Nope, neither do I. I do want to hand out that credit card donation number, if you would. It's 1-800-724-2719. That's 1-800-724-2719, extension 3. You can call them up, pay them with a little card. If you don't have a credit card, go to Lowe's, get you a little prepaid Visa. That'll work just fine.
All right.
Just, you got news, Patrick. Oh. Let's kick the news around, then I'm gonna have to get back to work and just listen.
Okay. Yeah, you said something. Now, who did I hear this from? Where did I see this? Maybe it was an article in, was it in Zero Hedge? I think it was in Zero Hedge. You mentioned the credit cards and all. There is Act Blue. There's also WinRed. Act Blue is the credit card processor for progressives. And anybody, for instance, I'm familiar with Act Blue because anybody who wanted to donate to Tulsi Gabbard or anyone else running in the Democratic primary in order to get that to count as a donation to help the candidate qualify for debates. You had to go through Act Blue, for instance. Act Blue, apparently, something like 75%, like the majority of the donations they are receiving, are in small quantities of less than $100 from cards like this type of anonymous prepaid card that you just mentioned. Why would that be? Well, that would be a way of corporations and others to skirt campaign finance laws, because if you're donating less than $100, you don't need to include all of this information. And the people who do include information, like about their employers, the Democrats, it's like the majority of Democrats are supposedly unemployed. This is a very interesting thing. I should have had the article up in front of me. Whereas the Republicans, the Win Red, it's just pretty transparent. Most people work and have a job. The donations are not being made anonymously and whatnot. But what's going on with Act Blue is just so obviously, campaign finance violations. It is, Soros and his ilk funneling all of this money anonymously. And of course, it's not just to candidates like Joe Biden. It's also to Black Lives Matter, because Black Lives Matter is going through Act Blue.
Well, isn't that interesting? Speaking of Act Blue and Zero Hedge in front of you, asking you shall receive, check that Skype text. Under Zero Hedge, it says Act Blue is undeniably the cash cow of the progressive movement, boasting over $6 billion raised for favored candidates since 2004. Wow. The organization has funneled more than $1.5 billion to leftist candidates in 2018 alone. Maybe that's why they won the House, do you think? And it has moved almost $900 million to assist progressive thus far in 2019 and 2020. Wow.
So this is a big deal. That's a big deal. So
if you were someone like with Soros money or Sheldon Adelson or, Saban, Chaim Saban, good old Chaim, you could take a bag full of those Walmart gift cards, loaded up with $500 each. You could just take a big bag full to, when you go to the campaign and just hand them to your favorite politician. And it's all untraceable.
Yeah, this or something akin to it must be what's going on. I mean, it has to be what's going on. So I'm glad. So I will post that Zero Hedge article on National Bugle during the break, and everybody can go look at it.
Excellent. Do we have any callers, or did you have some more?
We do have a caller. So do you want to stay on for our first caller?
I'll do that. Then when the first break hits, I'm going to go back to work and listen to you guys.
Yeah, some people have got to earn a living. Okay. I lost my text. Here it is. So our first caller is Josh from New York. Josh, welcome to the show.
Shalom.
Shalom. Shalom, y'all.
Shalom.
Shalom, y'all. Shalom. I know I've been calling a lot, so feel free to let me go if there are other calls. I don't want to take this time.
Well, we have another caller, but I want to hear what you have to say.
Okay, so I didn't get to get this question in last time. I wanted to delve a little deeper with you into the intentions of these Jewish political pundits and donors.
Mm-hmm.
And I'd want to hear your opinion. So what I was thinking is you look at a political pundit like Ben Shapiro.
Okay.
And he has a lot of good things that he has to say, I guess, when it comes to being pro-life and he takes some sort of stand against political correctness and victim culture, things like that. And then it's mixed with these obvious and blatant what do you call it, these obvious and blatant contradictions, right? Like he would say the left has this victim culture, and then at the same time he's like, I don't want to debate Nick Fuentes because he wants to kill me, you know, he's a Nazi, those types of things. And he also has these stances on foreign policy, very neocon like. And the first thing that you would think is, coming from your perspective or somebody else that really knows what's going on, is that he's rubbing his hands and, you know, he's trying to screw over the game. And I do think that when I see it, but I also kind of look back at my past, and obviously me being Jewish, I used to have those sort of thoughts, and that, well, that wasn't my intention, you know what I'm saying? So I would basically have a worldview that's very similar to that of Ben Shapiro, you know, a typical neocon. And my intention was pretty much pure intention. So I also recognize, on the other hand, that Ben Shapiro is a lot more attentive to these political topics and political theory in general. So there is a bigger chance of it being deliberate. So I guess my question to you is, do you think that people like him are intentionally trying to screw over the Guyan? Because there has to be some people at some sort of level that are trying to deliberately subvert whatever their intentions, because they're the ones funding these sort of think tanks and these sort of political outlooks and stuff like that. So what do you think about that?
So I think there are people who are deliberately trying to screw over the Goyim, but actually, I don't think there actually has to be. You could have a situation where people just really believe their own, what would you call it? I mean, their own brainwashing. They don't, they're kind of, it's like an auto wash cycle or something. There was a Marxist 100 years ago, an Italian Marxist, and I don't think he was Jewish. His name was Antonio Gramsci, and a lot of you might be familiar with him. A lot of the listeners might be more familiar with him than I am. But one of his ideas was on hegemony of ideas, and ideas can become hegemonic where, you know, they're just accepted, they're just believed, they don't need to be proven. And I think an awful lot of Jews, not necessarily Ben Shapiro, because Ben Shapiro works in this business all the time, so he might have a better idea of what's going on. But I think an awful lot of – I think to the extent that, for instance, Jews believe that everybody really is, you know, a Nazi waiting to happen, to the extent they believe what they're doing – they're going to be more effective at it. So I don't think everybody is cynical. And I think if you believe what you're saying, you're going to be more effective. And I think a lot of Jews do believe in what they're saying. I just think they're wrong about so much of these things, you know, whether it's about Israel, whether it's about the underlying genocidal tendencies of the Goyim or whatnot. And then, so that's, you know, so you're looking at a couple of categories. One is the cynical liar who really knows what he's talking about and is deliberately trying to pull one over on the Goyim. And another category, I guess, would be implicit from what you're saying, would be, we're on the break. We'll be right back.
Global governance has been in the works for generations and would have likely been achieved by now, but for the fact that the globalists left open their Achilles heel. With all their tools, Federal Reserve System, fiat currency, No Child Left Behind, and then Common Core education introduced to our schools to dumb us down, vaccines, pharmaceuticals to lobotomize us, GMO foods, insertion of compromised or bought and paid for politicians, judges, mainstream media propaganda, all pieced together like a puzzle designed to ultimately bring the world under submission. But with all their strategy, they forgot one thing, knowledge. and knowledge is power. With knowledge, their bombardment is nullified. Folks, with that, as brilliant and knowledgeable as you've become, among the wisest audience of any radio audience in the world, and you are, I want you to take a moment to reflect and ask yourself, how much of that knowledge did I obtain from Republic Broadcasting Network? How high has my consciousness been raised since I've been a listener? How fast am I now able to discriminate truth from fake news by being a Republic Broadcasting listener? How clear am I now able to see the world since I've been listening to RBN? Ask yourselves those questions, folks. Then ask yourself, what is that knowledge worth to me? Like my morning coffee, how would I survive without it? A voice of truth in a sea of lies. Do we not all need to make sure it survives? Like public broadcasting, we are now finding we can only survive with listener support. Censorship, advertisers being attacked, truth itself being attacked. It's the only way through this. We at Republic Broadcasting humbly ask you to become a supporter. Look at your budget and make a determination of what Republic Broadcasting is worth to you and what you can afford on a monthly basis. Go to republicbroadcasting.org and pledge 20, 30, 40, 50, if possible, 100 a month or more if it's affordable. Click the donate button and become a regular monthly donor. Assure both us and yourself that Republic Broadcasting truth will continue to flow like that morning coffee. The network thanks you.
What would you say if I told you we have a new tool that will increase production and lower maintenance costs for your meat processing company, and it would pay for itself in just 6 weeks?
When pigs fly!
The new EaseOff Model EZ4 replaces old spring-style carcass droppers and is faster, safer, and more reliable. The EaseOff lowers or lifts 1,000 pounds to or from your rail automatically using our remote control.
Sounds expensive! Can I afford it?
Can you afford not to try the EaseOff? It installs fast with just 3 bolts in place of your current dropper. The effortless operation will reduce fatigue and injuries, speed up your line, eliminate downtime, and increase profit.
How can I order my EaseOff?
Go to EaseOff.com, EazeOff.com, and hurry, because we are offering $200 off on the new EZ4 for a limited time. EaseOff.com. We make pigs fly. Cows, too. EaseOff LLC, Summersville, Missouri, 417-932-6419.
We are back. I didn't properly end the last segment because I took my eye off the clock, but Josh, you're still with me?
Yeah, I'm here.
Yeah, so I was trying to answer. I think at some level, anybody like Ben Shapiro, anybody who's involved in the media, a Jew who's involved in the media, they can look around and see how disproportional Jews are in the media, and you know, they have to know that there is an effect of Jewish domination, which they're not talking about. But still, they may well believe, they may well have drunk a lot of their own Kool-Aid. They might well believe a lot of these things. And to the extent they do, they're probably more effective. There are people, though, like, you know, Glenn Greenwald or Stephen F. Cohen, who really push against a lot of Jewish policies without specifically calling out Jewish power. And, you know, I wonder if they're, like, alarmed at what the Jewish power structure is doing. They're really alarmed at it, but wouldn't want to call it out the way someone like Gilad Atzman does, because they think, wow, you know, if the Goyim really knew what was happening, they might react, you know, because you have in history, you have had large-scale and even violent reactions from the Goyim when there's too much Goyim knowing. So that's kind of the way I see it.
Well, it's interesting. You talk about, like, Glenn Greenwald, and I don't know much about Stephen F. Cohen, but I find it hard to believe that, like, people like Glenn Greenwald are really know what's going on to the extent that someone like yourself does, because Glenn Greenwald buys into the whole social justice warrior narrative, which, if you know what's going on, it seems very hard for somebody to buy into it. And the same thing with Max Blumenthal. Max Blumenthal attended one of the BLM riots that were rioting against police brutality. So that's why I see some more sincerity in those people. I also see, like, people like Greenwald and Blumenthal, they're kind of like Chomsky babies. You know what I mean? They grew up in the Chomsky era, And they sort of latched on to, like, they latched on to his political beliefs. But they're not trendsetters. But if you look at somebody like, and the same thing goes with Ben Shapiro, by the way. That's why I say there could be some more sincerity on that, because Ben Shapiro is kind of taking on the talking points of the neocons that have been around, I think, since, you know, William F. Buckley, I think, and stuff like that. But the trendsetters like Noam Chomsky, who create the political outlook that most people adopt, you know what I mean? They have so many blatant contradictions and just blind spots when it comes to AIPAC, when it comes to Syria. Like Noam Chomsky supports U.S. presence in Syria. So someone like Chomsky is probably the Jewish talking head that I'm most suspicious of, that he's working at the least. He's aware that he's nervous about maybe pointing it out because it'll lead to a Holocaust. Oh God. Or at most he could be some sort of Mossad, you know, operative or something, because it's very strange how he was able to, you know, garner so much support from the media and so much coverage. And it's very strange that he has so many blatant contradictions in his beliefs.
There are more academic citations to his work than to any other person alive, although a lot of that might be in the field of linguistics rather than politics. So it's hard to know what to make of that. There's Chomsky, and there's, you know, Chomskyites like Amy Goodman. And during the invasion of Iraq, 17 years ago, like Chomsky wrote a pretty good book against the wars in the Middle East. You know, obviously, everything comes from his point of view. Everything comes down to American power and American corporate power, and Israel's a tool of American corporate power, which is like that's the blind spot or the lie. Depending on
But why did he attribute it to oil? There's no evidence of that.
Well, I mean, there's superficial evidence, but when you really at the time when you had Dick Cheney, who was the former CEO of Halliburton, who was a driving force in this, and you had Condoleezza Rice, who was a board member of Chevron Mobil, and there was had a tanker named after her. Like, superficially, it looked like, yeah, oil was into it. But in retrospect, you can see, well, these American oil companies got nothing out of it. The bids were all won by foreign oil companies.
He never attracted, right?
Yeah, and so, I don't know. It was plausible at the time. In retrospect, it doesn't seem like the oil companies were really the driving force, but although they may have been going along with it. So historically, the oil companies had been pro-Arab. But after the fall of this dismemberment of the Soviet Union, the end of the Cold War, and you had the unipower world, it looked like oil companies could get what they wanted through war rather than through markets. Okay, well, we're going to go off to the break. We'll be right back. You can have your final word, and then we'll go to the next caller.
All right.
You are tuned in to the Republic Broadcasting Network. Visit our website by going to republicbroadcasting.org.
Homeowners, if your lender has gone out of business or sold your transaction to another lender or servicer, you may be the victim of a wrongful foreclosure resulting in the loss of your home. If you've already lost your home, are in foreclosure, or even in good standing, you can challenge the mortgage transaction's illegal issue and your property can be restored to you, and your foreclosure can be stopped or reversed and the mortgage transaction declared unenforceable. State laws, U.S. title codes, the Uniform Commercial Codes, and U.S. Supreme Court rulings have upheld that defective mortgage documentations can reverse or stop foreclosures and enforce property title claims in favor of the homeowner. owner. We are having successes in stopping the process of foreclosure, the enforcement of the foreclosure judgments, the sale of property, and evictions after the sale. We are not attorneys, and we don't give legal advice. We are a professional team of legal researchers, providing forensic mortgage audits and expert witnesses. We have the knowledge to produce the evidence and enforce laws regarding your legal issues. We've been in business for 12 years without a complaint. Consultations are free, and we provide a free title search to confirm if your mortgage has legal defects. Please call 855-253-3748. 855-2 keep it today.
Extend your life with Extendovite.
Extendovite really works. Here are some reviews from Amazon.com. Nikki, great product. Have to try it for a few months to see results. After taking Extendovite for about 6 months, I have noticed improvement on the numbness of my hands and wrists from carpal tunnel. I will continue to buy the product. Ken Peaks, 5 out of 5 stars. Works as advertised. This formula is very powerful. Be careful to follow directions. I am feeling much better. My heart rate and blood pressure has stabilized and my lower edema has reduced. Lower leg pain due to blood clots has disappeared. Thank you. To order, call 1-877-928-8822. That's 1-877-928-8822 or visit our website at heartdrop.com.
Extend your life with Extendovite.
Hello, I'm Dr. Leonard Horowitz. I was right 30 years ago in warning the world about threatening lab virus outbreaks, AIDS, and Ebola. I was right 20 years ago when FBI Director Robert Mueller made me a suspect in the anthrax mailings because I warned the Bureau before the CIA's biocrime and Cipro sales psyops happened. I was right about COVID-19 being an AIDS-laced mutagen planned to resurge this fall to excuse officials' profitable depopulation globalization agendas. And I was right about the only safeguards being antioxidants and holy spiritual sustenance. Vitamin C, D, zinc, chlorophyll, oxygen, and oxysilver especially transmits the frequency resonance to neutralize the expanded function bioweapon. Oxysilver is a double superconductor of the healing power of love. It is the first nutraceutical invented to amplify prayer power and the faithful, loving intention of your heart. Buy, try, and stockpile OxySilver through HealthyWorldStore.com.
National Bugle Radio on the Republic Broadcasting Network. And Josh, was there anything you wanted to say before I move on to the next caller?
Yeah, I guess the last thing I'd add is that, and it's not talked about a lot, but I think that financial incentives as well as status, you know, high status, the need for that, I think that could really impede on people's ability to think critically and to actually search for the truth. And we see it playing out right in front of our eyes with the coronavirus. I think a lot of doctors are still buying into this whole hoax that we have to wear masks and we have to social distance and shutting down things is good, because I think, first of all, they're making a lot of money. So, you know, that already is like, why would they even want to look into it? But also, they're really becoming one of the high status, already a higher status in society than what they were. It's increased. They're becoming increasingly high status. So they kind of would want to buy into this narrative. So people are still afraid, you know, subconsciously, I guess. So people are still afraid and they still come up to them and they, you know, give them attention. They give them interviews and things like that. So I think that all these incentives really prevent them from making a rational decision. Does that make any sense?
Yeah. Now, my own doctor isn't buying into it at all. He sees it. We are eye to eye on this. And I know some other doctors, but I tell you one thing, I think a lot of the lower status healthcare workers, the nurses, receptionists, technicians, and what, I think, you know, they're getting a lot of status that they never had before. They're heroes now. But look what happened to the heroes of 9/11, the first responders, the police officers. They're completely being thrown under the bus. So who knows what's going to happen. But I always appreciate your calls. They're very thought-provoking. And please feel free to call anytime you want.
Okay, thanks so much.
Okay, and next we've got Matthew from Wisconsin. Matthew, welcome to the show.
Can you hear me clearly?
I hear you clearly. How are you doing, Matthew? Can you breathe?
I'm good. Yes, I can breathe freely. I'm inside my own flat or my apartment, as you say, in North America. First off, I want to say that Engelbert Poindexter SOB. I think he is. So give my regards on to him, Mr. Slattery. All right.
Thank you very much. I will give my regards to Engelbert.
Okay. In response to your previous caller's comment about the doctor's take on this COVID, or as I call it, a scamdemic, basically, I think they know. They know that masks do not work, okay? I for some reason, you cannot, to be a doctor, you cannot be somebody. So that's just my take. They know, but they're going along with it, I guess, in fear of their jobs, basically. Now, update. Okay, recently, I was arrested for a mask.
Hold on a second. You are breaking up some, and I want to make sure everybody hears what you have to say. So if there's any adjustments you can make, speaking closer to the mic or not being on speakerphone, whatever you can do, because I want everybody to hear you clearly.
Can you hear me now?
I think so.
Okay. Well, as I was saying, in regards to the mask, okay, probably 2 weeks ago, I was arrested. Because of it, basically, I went to a public library to do an employment application on paper. I tried to tell the arresting officers and the librarian by asking me to leave for not wearing a cock muzzle is a violation of the Civil Rights Act of 1964. And I made it clear that what they're doing is illegal and so forth. But as I tell people, I'm not anti-cop, but I tell people, these cops do not know the law.
Mm-hmm.
Otherwise, they wouldn't have arrested me, booked me, took my mugshot, basically, and cited me for disorderly conduct, which I wasn't at all. And I'm thinking, wait a minute, if I'm breaking a quote-unquote law, the mask law, quote-unquote, why am I being charged for something totally different? And so forth.
Right.
You still there?
Right. Why don't they charge you with not wearing a mask? Maybe there's
exactly,
not
exactly, basically. And I kept saying, okay, this is illegal. This is a mandate, not a law, and so forth. Now, on the flip side of that, all what's been going on, what happened to me recently, has kind of sparked my interest in laws and policies. Now, I've been looking up statutes in where I live, basically, and things of that sort, you know, like theft, just various things, okay, like public health orders and things like that. And it states, in Wisconsin, okay, a state of emergency can be declared at the discretion of the governor. And I'm thinking, well, wait a minute, there's no state of emergency. People aren't dropping dead in the streets and, you know, and so forth. So I'm wondering, okay, that right there, okay, is, in my regard, dictatorial overreach.
Mm-hmm.
And so forth. And now, and when I, what's so funny was when I tried to call a few attorneys regarding this mask issue, and all of them would not ran away from them or from my issue like a vampire in my face. And I'm wondering, okay, wait a minute, okay, you people are supposed to care about quote unquote justice. Why for some reason you don't touch an issue about someone's civil rights being violated, and so forth. So kind of makes me wonder, maybe they're in on this scandemic and so forth. Now, Mr. Slattery, you're a smart guy. Tell me something. I can't seem to find a straightforward, perspicuous answer, okay? I have an understanding of what a law is. A law has to be passed on the books, okay? But what is the difference between a law, a mandate, and an executive order?
So, like, the federal government level, executive orders will have the force of law, but they don't go through Congress. I guess I'm not necessarily the best person to ask on this. But you know, the president can issue an executive order. Now, it may well be that you know, a lot of laws are passed and then they say that they delegate you know, additional rulemaking to maybe to the president, to the secretary of Health and Human Services or to some other body. You'll see this sometimes. In terms of rules that must be obeyed, it's not as if I'm not that much of an authority on this, but I would think that in certain situations, governors can decree things, and it has the force of law, at least for the time being. But then we're seeing, for instance, in Pennsylvania, the federal court saying that Governor Wolf's decrees aren't constitutional, that his powers to decree things don't overrule the First Amendment, don't overrule the 14th Amendment. And I'm not the best person to ask on this. Just exactly what has the force of law and what doesn't. Sorry.
Okay. Well, it's funny because where I live, basically, I went into the building. No one hassled me for not having a mask and so forth. And the court clerk printed me up the governor's mandate, the guidelines he wanted, basically. And I read it. I thought to myself, wait a minute. Okay, the cops or whomever arrested me, or these people stating that you can't come in unless you wear a mask, okay, on it it says that if you see someone without a mask, what do you do? And in bold print it says nothing. There may be issues that individual may have that prevents them from wearing a mask, basically. And I said to myself, okay, right there, you violated one of the mandate's guidelines. So this doesn't make any sense.
Mm-hmm.
And
yeah,
so forth,
It doesn't make sense. And you mentioned doctors earlier. One thing about doctors is they have, pre-coronavirus experience, going back as many years as they've been in medical school, of wearing masks in particular situations. Now, obviously, most of the time they're not wearing masks. They are seeing patients who are complaining of a variety of ailments, and typically the doctor is not wearing a mask at that time. Now, when do they wear a mask? Well, if they're in surgery and they've cut open somebody's body, then people are wearing masks in that kind of situation. So there's a very limited set of situations where doctors and other healthcare workers wear masks, and in most situations they don't. And now all of a sudden everybody in society is supposed to be wearing a mask all the time. You would think that doctors, based on their experience of usually not wearing masks in all sorts of medical situations, you would think that more of them would be outspoken. But like I said, my own doctor is—he sees eye to eye with me on this, and yet I don't think he's necessarily in a position to be all that outspoken. Maybe he doesn't feel he can be outspoken. I'm not exactly sure what constraints he feels.
Well, I mean, either way, it's just furthermore on this issue, like the first day of school, I think last week, I was en route to the supermarket, and as I'm driving to school, I'm seeing parents, with muzzles on, their kids, so I rolled down my window and yelled, "Take off the mask! This is criminal! This is such and such! Your kids need to breathe! This is child abuse!" And, of course, the parents laughed at me, told me, "Oh, shut up. You don't know what you're talking about. You ain't no medical doctor." I said, "Ma'am, your kids have to breathe. It is their God-given right. Nobody can take away their right to breathe." But it's so sad, okay? These parents, I'm like, if you are dumb enough to put a muzzle on a rambunctious 8-year-old child, okay, I mean, then you really aren't fit to be a parent. To me right there, that is child abuse. And as a matter of fact, I looked on my state's laws and statute about child abuse, basically. It states something, okay, subjecting children to a harmful environment that's physically damaging and mentally and emotionally damaging. And don't you think putting a muzzle on somebody for 8 hours is physically damaging? You can't breathe.
Yeah. In normal circumstances, I think somebody who required their children to be wearing a mask 8 hours a day, that very likely youth and family services or whatever it's called would get involved. Of course, now we've got this, this massive society-wide push to have everybody wearing masks all the time, so it's hard to blame individual parents. But it is sad. I have another caller, but do you have any other thoughts before I move on?
Well, geez, I guess I'll probably call back next week. I don't want to be the most annoying caller you got, so I'm going to have to.
You're
yield
certainly
the line.
Not. No, you're welcome, and I really appreciate the fact that you're willing to be outspoken, because a lot of people don't feel like they're in a position to be outspoken, and to have somebody in a library who is speaking up, as long as you don't talk too loud in the library, or willing to challenge parents, give them as long as it's not aggressive, to give them the alternative viewpoint. You really don't have to be doing this. There's no reason for it. We do need people who are going to stand up, who are going to refuse to wear a mask in stores and things like that. Not everybody's in a position to do that, because some people might lose their livelihood. But if you're in a position to do it, if you're brave enough, then I salute your service.
Well, I appreciate it, Mr. Slattery. I have great respect for you.
Likewise. Okay. Well, we will go on to our next caller then. Thank you. Thank you, Matthew, and we will go to Pat from Texas. Pat, welcome to the show.
You kind of pulled my chain when you said Condoleezza Rice. Condoleezza Rice was on the cover of the Council of Foreign Relations book they put out every year. I guess if you get government money or something, you have to make a report. I don't know how it went. And that was kind of a surprise, but... You know where the UN. What you need to do is take on the UN, and because that's the problem. It's the problem. I mean, Cecil Rhodes, a fella in England, he had all the gold and silver and everything. He died, and he wanted to do something to get Britain back in control of us. So he formed the Rhodes. Foundation or whatever, I forgot what it was, but it was a league. It was a League of Nations at the time. Of course, it didn't pass. You know when it passed.
Well, the Americans didn't join it. The League of Nations was in existence for about 15 years.
Right, and then it became, when they did join, it was the UN. It's the United Nations. And
right.
So what you're doing is... You're talking about the UN takeover. It's in the book right here, United Nations Global Straitjacket by Joan Vion, V like in victory, E-O-N. Yeah. And so we're just marking all around the wrong thing because, I know it's not politically correct on the station, but you need to look at all that stuff. She said, well, three presidents were members, but you ought to see. I always look to see if they were member of Council on Foreign Relations, and I wrote them off. Okay.
Mm-hmm. Well, honestly, I think the United
Jimmy
Nations.
Carter was one. We thought he was just a peanut farmer. Oh, no.
Yeah, the United Nations obviously a very big international institution. It's a very large institution, and it has a certain amount of resources. A pretty substantial amount of resources, but I feel that the United Nations is more manipulated by other people in power than the manipulator itself.
Well,
you
can't say it's manipulated by Israel. They don't accept Israel.
Oh, Israel's a member of the United Nations, but the United Nations, the power resources of the United Nations are vested in the Security Council, which has 15 members. Five are permanent. The permanent members have veto power, and that's United States, Britain,
right.
France, Russia, and China. And certainly United States, France, and and Britain are, to a very large extent, controlled by Zionist interests.
Okay. Well, why don't they accept Israel? And
Israel's a member of the United Nations.
But they're not a member of the Security Council. They don't have a vote.
They would have to be elected by countries in their region to the Security Council, and that's not going to happen.
All of those people are Zionists, why don't they accept Israel?
Okay, well, we are.
And if it's running the world, if it's controlling everything we do, everything we say, your army is in trouble.
Thank you for your call, Pat. You call back again.
Homeowners, are you in foreclosure, expecting to be served with a foreclosure lawsuit, or suspect your lender has coerced you into an illegal mortgage transaction? A huge number of mortgages made in the last 10 years have legal issues and are possibly defective. State laws and the U.S. Supreme Court have upheld that defective mortgage documents are grounds for foreclosure defense and for counterclaims in favor of the homeowner. If your mortgage has been sold or assigned since closing the loan, it may be defective and you may be paying the wrong party, and the lender may not have standing or the right to foreclose or collect payments under the law. If you would like to know if your mortgage is legal or not, or know if you are paying the right party, we can help. Our initial consultations are free of charge. We are not attorneys. We are legal researchers and work closely with experienced lawyers who know how to help you find the evidence to help you keep your home. Call toll free 1-855-2-KEEP-IT. That's 1-855-2-KEEP-IT today.
Extend your life with Extendovite.
After about a month of Extendovite, I don't know what it is about the circulation factor. I was able to increase the weight, increase the amount of sets I could do. It has to do with the oxygen getting to the blood. You should market this as an athletic performance. And I don't change anything about my diet or anything. I just thought, this is amazing. Bilberry extract has got something called resveratrol in it, which is the same stuff that you get from red wine. It's also good for eyesight. And I was reading that the Royal Air Force during World War II would give their pilots bilberry jam so they could have better night vision stuff. This is amazing.
To order, call 1-877-928-8822. That's 1-877-928-8822. Or visit our website at heartdrop.com.
Extend your life with Extendovite.
Hey gang, Patrick Slattery here with an important message that is pertinent to anyone who shops for groceries, eats food, or just has an inquisitive mind like myself. What I'm about to introduce you to is a segment of our food culture that has been kept so low profile to the American public that virtually no one is aware of how dominant it is on our refrigerator and cupboard shelves. What I'm talking about is the kosher certification industry and a new app, Kosher-tified, that delivers a comprehensive education on all aspects regarding this little-known practice. After reviewing this app, I found that it is useful for practically anyone who purchases food, regardless of their religious faith or identity. Its database of products not kosher-certified is a win-win convenience for all food-conscious people. So why not check out thekosherquestion.com or click on the link at nationalbugle.com and see how modifying your grocery shopping with the Kosher-tified app can make a huge difference for your future.
Welcome back to the show, National Bugle Radio on the Republic Broadcasting Network. This is a live call-in show, so we have John from California. John, welcome to the show.
Hello there, Dr. Slattery.
Yes.
Hello.
How are you doing, John?
Okay. Can you hear me okay?
I hear you just fine.
Terrific. Okay. Hey, look, I would have called you. Sorry I called so late in your broadcast, but I just had some internet problems, so I'm about a half hour late calling. But anyway, this is with regard to the events of September 11th of 2001. And mm-hmm. I realized that was last Friday was the commemoration day or remembrance or whatever you want to call it. But the week before then, you had made the comment on your show, and I'm not sure who said what to whom, but it took me a while to figure out what you were getting at and roughly when in time it occurred. And you were saying that someone had said that the kerosene fuel fire will not reach a hot enough temperature in order to melt steel.
Jet fuel.
Yeah.
Jet fuel. I'm sorry. Well, that's essentially kerosene. Yeah.
Okay.
With some additives for lubricity and so forth. And that's true. But you countered with the idea that I'm just trying to remember who said what to whom, and I may have gotten that part wrong, but I recall it happening within the first few days after 9/11, or maybe the first week or two, very shortly after 9/11. That's when I remember that discourse taking place, and it was merely because the news media, the government-controlled news media, had said that they were struggling to put some justification into why the buildings collapsed, and based it on the fires, and they said, well, that what happened was the fires got so hot it melted the steel joints, and mm-hmm. and presto, there go the buildings. Mm-hmm. And then so since some people, and I was following this time with my own handbooks of materials and temperatures and so forth, that the hottest that a jet fuel fire can occur mm-hmm. when the air fuel mixture is absolutely correct based on the chemical equation for combustion is around 1750 or 1800 degrees Fahrenheit.
Mm-hmm.
Carbon steel, most carbon steel will not mm-hmm. begin to even form
and
droplets
on
the outside until about 2800 degrees Fahrenheit.
Right, and my point was that at higher temperatures, even if it's not melting temperature, at higher temperatures, the properties, the strength properties of the metal change.
True,
right? And
that's
I
true.
Used the example of heating up a aluminum coin to about 800 degrees Fahrenheit.
That's right. That's the analogy you used. That's correct. Yeah. I now remember. Yeah, and that's true. I'm not taking anything away from that. But there are other practical reasons why that would never happen in a structural steel building. Because number one, there are so many factors of safety that are between 3 and 5 or 6 or 7 times. Especially for joints and buildings, you know, and then the various architectural structural codes define all those. So we were
almost at the end of the show. If I could just clarify, my point wasn't to say that the buildings couldn't have fallen down or did fall down on their own weight or whatever. That wasn't my point. My point was just that saying using the melting point of steel in and of itself isn't proof.
I think that people were trying to answer was that it was a lie to say that the joints were melted because they couldn't possibly have melted. That was the whole point.
Well, that's
now you're right. It will lose strength.
You're right on that. Yeah, for sure.
It will lose strength, but because of all the safety factors and the fact that the jet fuel could never. Realistically have gotten anywhere near 1800 degrees Fahrenheit.
Okay, well, we're on the same page with this. The show is
ending. You need a burner to get the air-fuel mixture just right. So
right. Thank you for your call.
Extendivite really works. Here are some reviews from Amazon.com. Amazon customer, 5 out of 5 stars. I'm quite happy about it. This product has relieved what appears to be an angina problem, pain in the chest after climbing stairs, and short on breath. I'm quite happy about it. Dr. Sam Surreal. Good product and ingredients. Kept my blood pressure normal after mild heart attack in 2015. Switched to plant-based diet also to reverse atherosclerosis. John Bispicos. 5 out of 5 stars. Built up my immune system. To order, call 1-877-928-8822. That's 1-877-928-8822 or visit our website at heartdrop.com.
Extend your life with Extendovite.
You're listening to Republic Broadcasting Network, because you can handle the truth.